بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والسيد المرسلين سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم محمد. والصلاة والسلام على أهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين لا سيما مولانا وسيدي صاحب الأصل والزمان روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء وأجل الله تعالى فرجه الشريف ولعنة دائمة على أعدائهم ومنكر فضائلهم من الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين. Continuing on this evening in our session that we've been having on the commentary of Surah Luqman, chapter number 31 of the Noble Quran. And yesterday, for those who recall, we began a discussion, although it wasn't an exhaustive discussion, we were really only able to scrape the topic from the periphery, but we were speaking about the topic of music and the status of Islamic jurisprudence and the verses of the Quran on where we stand in relation to music. And as a summary, for those who were not here, we mentioned in brief that there are forms of music which are permissible, which are halal. And we also talked about the fact that there is also music which is haram, non-permissible. And obviously, the responsibility falls on each of our shoulders if we are listening to music. As we mentioned, it is our own responsibility to determine the permissible, and we can listen to it, and to refrain or learn what is prohibited or haram, and keep away from that style and genre of music. I want to continue in this discussion today with the next verse of Surah Luqman, and to see one of the outcomes. As we mentioned yesterday, I want to look at one of the outcomes of what happens when we engage, not only in sin in general, but the sin of listening to the impermissible music, because all of the sins that we perform, they may have an impact, rather they do have an impact on our next world, but sins that we do in this world also do give us or prevent us from certain things to enjoy and to perform in this world that we are currently in. And we've talked about this in the past in our discussion about Dua Kumail. And so today, the verse mentions the following, where Allah talks about what happens when we listen to music. Allah says, وَإِذَا تُتْلَى عَلَيْهِ آيَاتُنَا وَلَّا مُسْتَكْبِرًا كَأَنْ لَمْ يَسْمَعَهَا كَأَنَّ فِي أُذُنَيْهِ وَقْرًا فَبَشِّرْهُ بِعَذَابٍ عَلِيمٍ. And when our signs, our ayat, our verses, Allah says, are revealed, are recited to these individuals who are habituated to music, who are so caught up in the entertainment of the world, who are so caught up in pleasure and ignoring the teachings of Allah, Allah says that this person turn away in disdain, as if they had not even heard the verses of Allah at all, as if there was a deafness in their ears. So Allah, in a very interesting fashion, Allah sometimes has a sense of humor in the Quran. Allah speaks sarcastically sometimes in the Quran, and this is one of those examples. Allah says, فَبَشِّرْهُ بِعَذَابٍ عَلِيمٍ. Give them the good tidings, the glad tidings of punishment. Right? Bisharat is usually for good things. Allah talks about Bashir and Nadir. Bashir being the angel who gives good tidings of good things to come. But here Allah uses it in a mocking, in a joking fashion. Allah has a sense of humor as well. Allah is not always serious and straight-faced when He talks. So He says, فَبَشِّرْهُ بِعَذَابٍ عَلِيمٍ. Give these people the good tidings of them going to the fire of hell. So we talked about last night how there are forms of music which are halal, forms which are haram, and that we need to define those for our own selves. And the example we gave, which we'll repeat today, is that you can't expect to go to the marja taqlid that you follow. You can't go even to the sheikh of your community and give him a music genre and ask him to listen to it and to tell you, is it haram or halal? Just like we shouldn't go to an alim or a scholar or a mujtahid and ask him, is this particular restaurant haram or halal? Is this particular brand of halal meat that I find in my supermarket, is it haram or halal? It's not the job of the scholar to define the brand that you eat. It's not his job to tell you where to shop, what to buy. His job is to give you the demarcations, the limits of what you have to follow. He'll say, if it fulfills X, Y, and Z, then it is haram. If it doesn't fulfill those criteria, then it's allowed. So music is in that same category. that you once you define what is allowed and what is not allowed, then it is up to each and every one of us to either keep away from the haram if we want to avoid sin, or to obviously do what we want to do if we're not afraid of Allah's punishment. That is up to each and every one of us. And we mention also the verse of the Quran where Allah says that each and every one of us, we can't fool ourselves. بَلِ الْإِنسَانُ عَلَىٰ نَفْسِهِ بَصِيرًا وَلَوْ أَلْقَى مَعَذِيرًا. Allah says we are a witness over ourselves. Even though you and I try to fool ourselves and try to pretend that we don't know the rules, at the end of the day, when we learn the ahkam and we know right from wrong, and we try to still circumvent the system by legal loopholes, we still know that deep down inside we're doing something which would not really be pleasing to Allah, and Allah will hold us to account for that on the Day of Judgment. So one of the things I talked about last night is to look at how to kick this habit. If you look online, you'll see that when people talk about music, they talk about it as an addiction, just like drugs, like heroin, like marijuana, like alcohol, because it permeates into us in that same way, because we're always surrounded by music. I'm sure if each and every one of us were to have our cell phone ring, we'd probably have some tune or another. It probably wouldn't be a salawat or a Quran or a dua. It would be a top 40 song probably. And when you go to Hajj, you hear the same thing. When you go for ziyarat, people in the haram are listening and have the same ringtones of music. And so it's everywhere that we go. We can't get away from it. Obviously, the haram is there and the halal is there. But how do we kick this addiction? How do we, if we want to really get out of the rut of listening to the haram music, what can we do at a practical level? Because ultimately, this is what it's all about. The Quran is not just a book of theory, of pie in the sky, of ideally this is what it should be. Allah breaks it down for us, and Islam breaks it down to the lowest common denominator, that if you want to do something, here is a step-by-step plan. If you want to keep away from something, Allah doesn't leave us in the dark. The Prophet and the Imams don't leave us without guidance. And so what are the steps? This isn't in the hadith, this is from other individuals and from experience that we see that these are some of the steps that we have to realize and we have to go through within our lives to kick the addiction of the haram music. Number one is that you and I who are involved in the haram, especially the music, we have to acknowledge it for ourselves. Right? If I am in a state of denial, then I'll say, well, there's nothing wrong with it. What I'm doing is okay, it's legit. So if I realize that what I'm listening to, and I give you the example again, it's not limited to Western music. It can be from Bollywood, it can be from Nollywood, it can be any of these institutions where music is being produced. It doesn't have to be English music, it can be from Pakistan, from India, from Iran, from Iraq, Afghanistan, it doesn't make a difference. I'm not going to say because it's from the East, it's allowed. No, if it's haram, even if it's from the Islamic Republic, it's haram. We're not going to, you know, be patriotic to a country because they're doing haram. If it's not allowed, it's not allowed. But we have to acknowledge in ourselves that what I'm doing is not right. And that's the first step to rehabilitation, is acknowledgement of what I'm doing. So once I learn the rules, and I'm sure that this, what I'm listening to is haram, and I want to kick this habit, I have to acknowledge it in myself, that this music is playing a detrimental role on my life, and I want to get rid of it. So acknowledgement is the step number one. From there comes an intention that I'm doing this not for the sake of my mom and dad, because they don't want me to listen to the music. I'm not doing it for my spouse, for anybody, for my children. I'm not doing it for anybody except for the sake of Allah. The intention has to be that whatever I'm doing is only for the pleasure of Allah, that Allah is not pleased with this action. Allah is not, you know, accepting of this action that I'm doing, of this music that I'm listening to. And so I have to make a conscious decision and ask Allah that this is my intention, that I want to remove this from my life. Now you come and help me along this path. That's the second stage. Number three is a physical separation. So if you have those CDs at home, it means to break them in half. And it's hard. I know it's hard. I've gone through it before. taking your entire music collection and having to snap each and every CD in half and throw it in the garbage. People say, well, can't I sell it? Put it on eBay, put it on Kijiji, on Craigslist, make a few dollars out of it, right? Why not? I paid for it, make some money out of it. But it's the same as if somebody gives you a bottle of wine for a gift at work. You can't go and sell that wine. It's haram. So if it's haram for you, it's haram for somebody else. So there's no choice but to break those CDs or records or whatever you have. Just remove them from your life. And you'll say, well, nobody has CDs anymore. It's all digital. So don't throw your phone in the garbage. Don't throw your iPod away. But delete those files. And you'll say, well, it's hard to delete them. Okay, fine. You know what? When Islam came and prohibited alcohol, it didn't happen in one day. It took four verses of the Quran, maybe 15 years. Muslims were drinking and Islam was coming to them. But you couldn't kick the habit cold turkey. And so Islam gave a gradual process of removing of alcohol. So I would say the same. If music is a part of your life and you want to get out of it, start deleting one song at a time. Maybe every day you pick one track you want to delete until all of that music is off of your audio player. It'll be hard. You know, delete it and also empty the trash bin on your computer. Don't let them sit there and linger because you might restore those files from your garbage bin, right, before your system does that cleaning. So remove them completely from your life. Really, that's the only goal. That's the only way we can do it. And if you even look at Western experts when they talk about, you know, how to kick alcohol or drug abuse, you have to be physically separated from it. You can't be in a nightclub and say, I'm going to stop listening to music. You can't say, I'm going to stop listening to music, and you still have all of the songs on your phone. So you have to have them removed completely from where you're at. But it's not only enough to remove them, but maybe we have to have a replacement. And that's where we have, you know, lectures you can put on your phone. You have Quran, you have supplications. You have what they call nasheed, Islamic music, so to speak. Music which is religiously permissible to listen to. It can be in Arabic, it can be in Urdu, it could be in English. There's much being composed even in English today for those who are looking for a viable, permissible alternative. And so we have to find a replacement. And that replacement doesn't have to mean that I sit, you know, sit all day and listen to that. It can be maybe a couple of hours a day until I wean myself off, until I'm able to actually realize that there's no value and worth in listening to this music. Because really, when you look at it, most of it, the lyrics today are nothing of value to the human being. There's no real benefit in the music that is being produced today. Much of this pop, you know, culture and the music, what is it talking about? Those who listen to it, you know the lyrics. You know what they talk about. What benefit is there in there for the soul? It doesn't help you progress in school. It doesn't make you a better student. You won't get straight A's in high school if you listen to whoever you listen to. It's not going to help you. So find a replacement that will help. Find something that will connect you back to Allah. And last but not least is spiritual support. We can't expect to kick the habit of anything, drugs, of alcohol, of, you know, any kind of substance abuse, of music, of, you know, gender relations, illicit relationships, if we're not asking Allah for support. And so we always need to be connected to that higher authority. Make dua to Allah. You know, people might be wondering, well, is there a special dua that the Prophet taught? No, there is no special dua. I can't come with a magic wand and, you know, wave it over your child's head and they can stop listening to music. There's no special fairy dust you can sprinkle on somebody to make them be a good Muslim. It's all about the self. We have to do it ourselves. We have to make that change within. And we have to ask Allah that, yo, oh God, I want to change my life. I realize I've been on a wrong path, and I want you now to come and change and help me change myself. And as we know, as the Quran clearly tells us, that when we make a sincere prayer to Allah, that Allah will accept it. And the month of Ramadan is the best time to make those intentions to Allah, where we know that the supplications are magnified, our prayers are accepted. As the hadith of Rasulullah talked about when we mentioned in the month of Ramadan at the beginning, that the supplication, as we know, is the weapon of the believer. The supplication is the key to the acceptance and the change in our own character that we want to see. But we have to ensure that we do all of the prerequisites. We have to make a change in ourselves. And then we have to ask Allah. Allah says, إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُغَيِّرُ مَا بِقَوْمٍ حَتَّى يُغَيِّرُ مَا بِأَنفُسِهِمْ. Allah will not change the condition of a people until they change what is within themselves. So to ask Allah, oh Allah, help me in this and that and this, and I'm not making a change, I'm not trying to reform and rectify myself, it's hypocritical. Allah will, not that Allah cannot do it, Allah can do anything. But Allah will say, if you yourself don't want to be changed, how can I go and forcefully change you? Islam is not about compulsion. Allah cannot compel you to do something. It has to come from within. It has to be in the core of our essence that we want to change, and then Allah will bring about that change. Let me bring out a few lessons that we can learn from this verse before I close. I have a very short video for us to watch, especially for the young kids. Hopefully they'll enjoy the video and they'll learn also something from it. But let me give us a few lessons that we can learn tonight from this verse. One is that listening to anything which is called wasteful, what the Quran calls lahwul hadith, anything which is a waste of time, which will detract us from Allah, that this will prevent a person from ever wanting to even listen to the words of the truth. You know, if we are engaged and habituated to listening to haram music, really our soul will not want to listen to the halal. It won't want to listen to Quran, right? Our soul will just shut off and say, I don't want to listen to this. So we have to remove it if we want to replace it with something much better. We see also that arrogance, istikbar, as Allah says, the mustakbir, that this arrogance will prevent us from accepting the truth into our lives. When we feel that we're always right, that we're doing right, when we're on the path and we have arrogance, then this will be a barrier further from us accepting Allah within our lives. Allah shows us that the arrogant and proud ones, that they always deserve to be humiliated and abased because of their acts of arrogance and transgression. Because after all, Allah is the only one who has the name Al-Mutakabbir. Only Allah can be proud. But us, we have no right to be proud for anything. Imam Ali says, why are you proud? Your origin was a drop of sperm, which is najis. Your death, you're a carcass, which is najis if somebody touches you. And as you live, you carry urine and feces within you. You yourself are carrying najasat. And yet we think that we're proud. Why? Because we made it rich in the world? Because we have a nice car, a big home, we have millions in the bank, so we're proud. Realize at the end of the day, all of us go into the same hole in the ground. All of us are in that same outcome on the day of judgment. You know, I've been to funerals of Maraja in Qom. Carried the janazah of a Maraja Takli down the streets of Qom. And you know what? When you go to the burial ground, the same talqeen that we recite, when we say all of those things in the talqeen and salatul mayyat, that we know nothing except for good, and if he was a sinner, may Allah forgive him. Those same things that we say about, that are said about us, are said about the greatest of maraja taqleed. So we're all equal at the end of the day when we go on the grave. It's only this 50, 60 years where we are competing. Al-haqam wa-takathur, competition for wealth and position and fame and authority. That is what we will leave behind in this world. We see that one of the methodologies, and this is just on a positive note, one of the positive things we can learn from this verse is one of the ways that we can use to propagate and teach about Islam to our children, to our students in madrasa, to our grandchildren, is that we have to use examples, similitudes. Allah loves examples in the Quran. Allah gives these parables. ضَرَبَ اللَّهُ مَثَلًا مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ هُمْ مِلُوا التَّوْرَاةِ. Allah gives all these beautiful examples in the Quran. Because when I give you an example, it makes more sense. If I give you an abstract concept, and then I say that it's just like this, right? It's just like this. Then you say, oh yeah, I know that. And then I can put two and two together, and I understand the concept. So Allah does that. And Allah tells us, when you want to speak to people, to convey a message, use an example. Teach by example, lead by example. you know, not by theory, not by words and concepts, but by a practical example and an explanation. And last but not least, before I close, before we show the movie, before Maghrib, is that those who do not accept the truth, Allah says that it is like they have a heaviness in their ears. You know, Allah is saying that they can't hear anything because they themselves have blocked their ears. It's like when you're driving down the road and somebody has headphones on and they do crazy things. They're on their bike or they're walking because they can't hear things around them. Allah says that when we get to that level of rejection of the truth, it's just like that. So let me close, and inshallah, for the last few minutes, we'll just watch a very brief video about what we talked about last night and tonight in a very short summarized format. Salu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. About music.
The Holy Prophet said, two sounds are cursed in this world, as well as in the hereafter. The sound of the flute played in celebration for a bounty, the twang of string instruments played during a calamity. He also said...
Wait.
What? Things just got a little bit deep. It's not that simple. While it might seem like these ahadith are absolute, we have to take a look at what our maraja have said. After all, they've read a few more ahadith than we have. These ahadith have been analysed in great detail by our contemporary scholars, who have looked at the other relevant ahadith and also analysed the context in which we live. Let's break it down. When asked, is it permissible to listen to revolutionary songs accompanied by sounds of piano, flute, drum, windpipe, and electronic piano, Ayatollah Sistani says, if the music accompanying it is that which is suitable for entertainment and amusement gatherings, it is not permissible to listen to it. But what does that mean? Well, it's the type of music which is suitable for haram gatherings like discos and concerts and bars or even weddings where Muslims are not observing hijab. Ayatollah Khamenei has also said any sort of music or signing which keeps human beings away from Allah and away from moral merits and spirituality, strays human beings from the path of Allah, the Exalted, is considered as lahwi and haram. Okay. But what if you're listening to that kind of music on your own? I mean, it's not in a social gathering, right? Right? Wrong. That music which is haram is haram, whether you're on your own or with others. Yeah, you hit the right note there. But wait a minute, what if halal music is played in a haram amusement gathering? After all, I'm sure that there's some posh places out there where people drink wine and listen to classical music. And don't they play nasheeds in Islamic weddings nowadays? Doesn't that mean they're haram as well? No! That music which is halal, whether you're on your own or with others. It comes down to the nature of the music. But what would we define as music which is specifically played in haram gatherings? Well, it's that kind of music which is usually played in haram gatherings. You know what I mean. The kind of music that when you're in an environment where dancing and drinking and smooching is taking place, people want you to turn the volume up. In the very same environment, imagine if you played a halal soundtrack. I don't know, like classical music or a nasheed or an epic movie soundtrack. People would probably stop what they're doing and be like, I need to sort my life out.
Yeah, man, I'm trying to get my groove on up in here.
It is making me lose my mojo. It's compelling me to begin a conversation when I have nothing to talk about.
Makes sense. Haram. Halal. Funky. What we have got to remember is music also comes with its own culture and fashion. And when we listen to a certain type of music, it doesn't only affect our ears, but our hearts too. I have the strangest urge to go talk to a girl right now. The Holy Prophet said music is a charm of adultery. Some types of music entice and arouse desires within a person, give you goosebumps or chills, or make you feel euphoric. But in reality, it's nothing but a chemical high. Your brain is just flooded with dopamine.
Oh, but it doesn't affect me in that way. I can listen to Bollywood songs all day and think of nothing but God. I can listen to a haram track and it doesn't take me towards sins or nothing.
Really? So I guess you can have a drop of alcohol too. After all, that small amount won't make you drunk, will it? Don't take it personally. No, really, the fatwas of the Grand Maharaja don't make it a personal thing. The key here is human beings. So that means not just you, but rather human beings collectively. The final stroke is that if it's suitable for a haram amusement gathering, then it's haram, full stop. Otherwise... Obviously, we didn't have time to go over all the marjas, so it's important that you check out what your marja says. We'll see you next fortnight when we're going to be talking about activism.